We are back. It's Lions Collective. We're live every single Wednesday at 6 p.m. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi, Crunchtime Sports, Woolworth Sports. We're joined by these three gentlemen. We had a busy day and we'll continue to have busy days. Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and of course, Will Birchfield, 97.1 The Ticket. We got Will back in the mix.
Let's go.
We got some things to talk about, as Dan would say, somewhat of a pajama party, but it's still training camp and people are fired up about it. How are we feeling today, fellas?
Ready to rock. Let's let this thing rip.
Let's do it. Let's talk about some of those top headlines from day one of training camp. I know Dan spoke today, went into some different topics, but what are some of the things that stood out to you guys out of the first day out of camp here? Pads, of course, no pads, but still had some headlines.
Yeah, one of the first things you always want to hear is injury. Yeah, we got an echo here, guys. I don't know. Anybody know where that's coming from?
I do not. How do I sound when I talk?
Are we good now?
I don't know.
Oh, I think it's gone.
Oh, there we go. We're good. All right. Yeah. So back to the point here at hand.
That problem injuries, solving, right? Baby.
Yeah. Lions had several guys on injuries, and I think we kind of wanted to update all those. And I think most of us were most interested in kind of where the Kirby Joseph situation would land, and I'll get back to that, but I thought the biggest update was Brian Branch. You know, that was probably the one I was least concerned about because I knew he'd end up on PUP. I figured he'd be out for a while. And I think the timeline got moved up optimistically from maybe where most of us had kind of settled when he'd be back. You know, Dan Campbell laid out today that Branch could potentially be back by the end of training camp, at least in practice form. And that probably still doesn't mean he starts week one, but I think now you're looking at maybe first quarter of the season, you're going to get this super versatile defender back that kind of makes the defense tick. And that's probably 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks earlier than maybe some of us anticipated. So that was really, really positive. On the Joseph front, I don't know. I think we were all kind of waiting to see whether he'd end up on PUP, whether he didn't, he did. And Campbell kind of put the timeline in the same bucket as Branch, which was also interesting. I think good and bad there, right? Like, it's, you know, nobody's saying the season's over or he can't come back. They're continuing to be really methodical and patient with his recovery, but to hear probably not week one, I think, is a negative. But to see the way Joseph was working on the sideline today, I thought the intensity of the running he was doing, some of these really kind of aggressive stop-start lunges, running up the hill full speed. You know, it's a small sample size and limited movements, but I looked at it and said, God, looks like he's moving pretty damn well. I guess we'll see how the body feels tomorrow, but I guess that's the silver lining to the situation for me.
Yeah, a bit of a mixed bag there with the safeties. I agree with you, Justin. I think, like, the Branch news is probably the top headline just because we – kind of expected him. I don't know about you guys, but I was thinking, like, probably won't see him till October, even at practice. So for Dan to say, you know, late in training camp, you're talking like August, potentially end of August, early September, that's a significant timeline bump for Brandt there. And the fact that you can get him maybe by early October, even if he has to sit out 4 games to start the season, that's still earlier than you thought. So maybe a bit optimistic on Dan's part. I know he tends to do that sometimes, but even just getting him back in practice at some point in September would be huge news. And I agree. Like, I think the Joseph news is a little bit less optimistic, obviously. I think, you know, talking to Dan back in the spring, kind of got the sense that they would, you know, take it a little bit easy with Kirby, I guess, to start training camp. But the fact that he's on that same timeline as Branch, there's a couple ways to read that. If you're just looking at it as, oh, Branch's not going to be back till October, that's obviously worse. But, you know, if he comes back in September and Kirby's on that same timeline, that's not the worst. You know, you'd like him back at some point in training camp in August, but, you know, if he has to wait a little bit, that's fine. He's not going to, doesn't sound like he'll be available for week one based on Dan's comments. He's not really expecting that. So, yeah, so the safety news, you know, some good news and some bad news. I'll take like more of a broad, big picture look, unless Birchie has anything to add on safeties real quick. But
no, I'll just say on Kirby, I think more important than the timeline is the fact that they still need to see how his knee responds to practice. Like, Dan's timeline could be entirely blown up in 3 weeks. Hopefully it isn't, but it could be if Kirby, like last season, gets out there and after a practice or two realizes that the knee is swollen up again and he needs another 2 weeks or 3 weeks off his feet. So the biggest hurdle here for Kirby isn't Can he get on the field in September? It's can he stay on the field in August once he gets on it?
Yeah, for sure. And that's always going to be the big test with him. What I was going to say is, I think Dan talking about sort of the newness to it all, you could really feel it on a day like this. Obviously, I think in his opening statement, he used the word excited like four times, if that gives you any indication of how he's feeling. But just seeing all the new faces from the coaching staff to the players and the depth they've accumulated. And then, you know, obviously some of the faces that aren't here anymore, you know, Alex Anzalone, some of these guys that were here for a while, you really see like the leadership being placed on guys like Jack, guys like Panay, guys like Sain. And obviously those guys have been leaders over the years. But the Lions kind of took those crutches away in their respective position rooms. And so to see those guys kind of taking it on themselves to right these wrongs from last year, you know, wrongs being still a winning record. But to get back to where they were, you need those guys to be at the top of their games, you need those guys to kind of lead the way for some of these younger players that they brought in. And, you know, I think Dan likes the challenge of, you know, getting it done with some younger players, getting it done with the pups that, you know, they brought in here years ago that are starting to become vets. And I think you kind of felt that energy on day one, even though they weren't in pads. And so that was really cool to see out there just today.
Yeah, I think the other headline, speaking secondary quickly, is Terrion. You know, Dan addressed it for the first time since they released him. And he told us that he told the team last night it was just the best decision for the team. I know you guys discussed Terrion last week, so I don't want to belabor it. I'll just add this. It wouldn't have been the best decision for the team had Terrion been playing over his first two seasons at a level reflective of his draft pedigree. If he was playing like Devin Witherspoon or like Quinyon Mitchell or others that were taken in the first round at a similar juncture, they would have found a way, I believe, to tolerate this for a little bit longer and hope that the resolution was positive for them. You see this across the NFL all the time. If players are valuable enough, teams are willing to wait on them, even sometimes through legal issues. I think, you know, that the Lions told us pretty honestly, not only maybe how they viewed Terrion through two seasons, but also how they viewed him developing in year three. Again, I think if they truly believed he was going to blossom into a CB1 that they thought they had drafted back in 2024, he might still be on this roster. I know it's speculative, but that's just the impression that I got watching them have an about face pretty suddenly last month.
Colton, I want to go back to your point. I'm really fascinated by the psychology of sports in this regard, right? Like football, you need kind of these intrinsic motivators to get you going. And the Lions, when they started building this thing in 2021, they had to do it on a shoestring budget just because of some of the cap dynamics with Stafford. But they went and they got all these guys that just had these massive chips in their shoulder, kind of figuratively, but maybe literally, with Anzalone's shoulder from New Orleans.
And John Pedicini.
the chicken nuggets or whatever.
Yeah. It was I think it was a chicken heart. Yeah, that's what Dan called it. Yeah.
A gross description. But like all these guys that just had everything to prove and kind of felt like the world was against them. And then now they've gotten this star-studded roster. I don't know if we talked about this last week with the ESPN top 10 rankings with all the executives and scouts and everything. Like, no roster in the NFL had more players appear on this list than the Lions. I think 9 or 10 overall. Like, it's an absolutely star-studded roster, even with some of the adjustments they made. And so, like, what is the delicate balance of complacency, knowing you're really good, with finding that, like, that extra gear, that hunger that, you know, some guys that were doubted are coming off injury. It's just really fascinating. I mean, it feels like that's what they're trying to capture. I know Dan said go back to 2022, and, you know, that's where it really started clicking, but also took half a season for them to figure that out. So maybe the second half of 2022 is what they're looking to recapture more than anything.
I feel like when Dan says that, because I've been thinking about that all offseason, because he's been saying it multiple points, I feel like what he wants is to recapture that, like, just the way they carry themselves that year. Like, when they were learning how to win, I think, you know, it started off 1-6. You know, we talked to Sheila, and she came out and defended Dan and Brad and said, we're going to get this thing turned around. And they did. But I think if you can find a way to recapture that mentality where, like, even when they were losing those games, they weren't losing by a lot. They just had to figure it out, right? And so we saw that later in the year. They figured out how to win. Then that set them up for 23, and they went 12-5 and went to the NFC Championship game with, you know, more talent on the roster than they had the year before. So I think if you can find a way to recapture that mentality from those early years, I think that's what Dan is trying to allude to.
Yep.
When he brings that up, like pairing that mentality with the talent that they now have. Because I almost think, and Barnes kind of mentioned this today, there was a little bit of complacency last year. And there was a little bit of, well, we went 15-2 the year before. We're the Lions. We've established who we are. We have all this talent. Like, I think they just kind of thought that talent could carry them to more wins than they actually ended up with. And to close out some of those games that they weren't able to close out with last year. So if you can get back to that early, I don't want to say grit. I know it's such a cliche, but like, I think that's what he's alluding to. Like, we lost some of that. We got to get it back. Talent-wise, we're fine. But if we can find a way to just remember, hey, anyone can beat anyone in this league on a given Sunday. We're not immune to that just because we have the talent. So you can find a way to pair that together. You can get something really special. And I think for things that Dan can control, that is one of them. He can't control, you know, injuries and things happen in this league. But I think he's really taken it upon himself to instill that in this team. I think you've heard it with his comments throughout the offseason.
Yeah, Colton, you used the word mentality and trying to get back to what it was in 2022. So Dan used that exact same word and that exact same time frame today when he sat down with us on our Fox News show. And I'll get into this a little bit more later on our fourth topic. But it's interesting. He described to us exactly what that mentality is, what it means to him. And his description of it, his definition of it was a little bit different than I thought it would be. It is a lot of what you said, but it there's more to it than just this saltiness, this orneriness, this desire to prove themselves. And maybe that's a tease to stick around for 40 more minutes, but I did find it to be a pretty revealing answer. The other thing that obviously fueled them back in 2022 and beyond was establishing one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. And it caught my ear today when Dan, who has been so careful this entire offseason and spring to avoid giving out praise that hasn't been earned yet on the field, spoke pretty confidently already of his offensive line and what they might and probably will, in his mind, become this season. You know, he was asking at one point, will you realize that this unit is making strides, or will you know what you have here? And, you know, he kind of hemmed and hawed for a little bit and said, obviously, it's going to take some time, got to get pads on, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, he came back around and he said, it's a good veteran group. Yet some young guys that are unknown, unproven, they got an opportunity. I feel like what comes out of that room, those five, are going to be better than what we had last year. It's going to be an upgrade and not just a little. I believe that. And that, to me, will, in a lot of ways, make or break this Lions team. The defense obviously has to be reimagined in some ways, but for them to reestablish themselves as a football team, it's going to start with that mauling offensive line. And I get what Dan's saying, and I think I've made this point here before, but it felt like entering last season, the only place for that offensive line to go was down over the course of the year. Like at every position other than right tackle last year, you entered the year probably with an inferior player than the one you had before. Like at left tackle, you had a year older, a year more battered, and a year closer to retirement, Taylor Decker. At left guard, you had a rookie in Mahogany, basically, who was entirely unproven. And while like he might have been an upgrade over Graham, it never came to fruition because of injuries and inconsistency. At center, obviously, you went from Frake to Graham. At right guard, you went from Zeitler to a rookie, largely an unknown, in Ratledge. Then obviously you had Penei at right. Now contrast that with this year. You could say it's an upgrade at every position other than right tackle. You've got Sewell stepping in at left tackle. You've got a year two Mahogany, or maybe a Ben Barge, who I think we agree either one is better than year one Mahogany. I think a pretty significant upgrade at center going from Graham to Cade. Year two Ratledge, I think, is going to be a Pro Bowl caliber player. And then we'll see what Blake Miller looks like as a rookie on the right side. But when Dan imagines those five and their potential, I understand why he sees the trajectory headed this way in 2026, when it felt like last year, the best it could do was probably just be a plateau. And eventually it declined and in a lot of ways tanked their season.
By the way, still an echo?
No, you're good.
Nope.
Okay. I think I fixed it. All right, let's get to the Jahmyr Gibbs thing. Sorry about that. I don't know what that was. I do want to give a shout-out, by the way. This Jahmyr Gibbs kind of hold-in, that's at least for the first day of training camp that has occurred. John Jansen actually said this, you know, weeks ago, and that you know, everyone was kind of discussing the possibility. Now that he wasn't there, and we know the contract talks, and Dan spoke about the contract, at least the extension, the narrative with, you know, Sam, Jameer, and Brian. But what did you guys take away from that? Gibbs not being there. I know Bijan's also not there, or he actually is there, but he has a jersey on. He's not practicing, but he's at practice with the Falcons. But what did you guys take away from the Jameer Gibbs situation and not being at practice and kind of a hold in there, not participating in practice, I should say. But what's your guys' take on that situation?
I think there was a justification in the decision that happened today for Jameer Gibbs, and that happened down in New Orleans, where defensive tackle Brian Breese, another first rounder from that draft class that has, you know, started off his career pretty well and is in that category of ready for an extension, first day of camp suffers what's believed to be a torn ACL. And Gibbs has been extraordinarily durable. He's tough. He's physical. But football, it's just one wrong step sometimes. And the second contract is often the biggest for an NFL player. And so I know fans don't like to hear that, but like these negotiations have carried into camp, could have got done earlier. There is seemingly a weird game of chicken here with Gibbs's agent and Bijan's agent. You know, those are, it's a weird situation. I can't think of another one where it's 1A and 1B at their position in terms of talent, age, production. Like the guys that deserve to be the two highest paid players of the position are both kind of in that same contractual situation and, you know, weirdly competing against each other. And, you know, that's a factor the Lions can't contend with. They can't do anything about. It's outside of their control a little bit, but I think this thing gets done before camp. I don't think it lingers too long. I did the projection a long time ago, but I still think it's going to fall in that range of either 3 years, 55 to 60 million, or 4 years, 75 to 80 million. I think that bakes in his fifth year option that they've already picked up, which would have been, I think, 14.3, something in that ballpark. And then the new money beyond that resets the running back market. That's what's going to happen. That is what deserves to happen for that level of talent, for that level of production. And I think the last point I want to make here is some people have said, oh, what if they should have never got rid of David Montgomery? This would never have happened. He'd be worried. But no, it doesn't matter. If David Montgomery was still in this building, the result would be the same. Gibbs has earned what he's about to get, and I think he would be holding out, holding in, regardless of who else was in that room.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's obviously like this negative connotation when it comes to hold-ins, hold-outs, whatever you want to call this. I think it's different in different places, right? Like some teams handle this better, some players handle it better than others. If you're going to do it, I feel like this is the way to do it. Like, Gibbs hasn't said anything. I know Rich Silva tweeted out a photo that the Lions posted showing up to or reporting for camp.
Yeah.
So he's at least seems like he's around the building at the very least. I know we didn't see him at practice today, but it seems like he's at least been around.
That photo was from last year.
Was it from last year?
No, I'm kidding. Oh. That'd be diabolical.
Can't say this stuff. I'll believe it. I'm very gullible.
You got me too. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. You got me on that too.
It's real.
So it seems like Gibbs is around the team at the very least. He's not making a big deal about this. And I don't, you know, if you're going to do this, like the best way to do it is to be quiet and let us, you know, put it out there. Cause I don't think any of us would have noticed, you know, otherwise, unless we're out there at practice. So he's not going about this posting on, you know, on Instagram, saying anything about it publicly. He's just kind of quietly going about his business. And look, I get it, for the position he plays, which, you know, we are, as Justin mentioned, we've already seen a bunch of injuries, ACL, whatever you want to call it, like a bunch of injuries across the league in training camp already. Like the Panthers lost Nick Skorton, that sucks. Like there's already been guys dropping. Given the position he plays, given the contract that we think is going to get done soon, if it takes a week to get this done, you want to sit out for a little bit. Like I have no problem with that, man. Like running backs are devalued across this league. If one of them, you know, obviously at the top of the market wants to get paid and you know, take his time getting there and not risk anything in the meantime, go for it, man. That's like generational money we're talking about. You don't want to risk that before it gets done. So I'm pro player on stuff like this. I totally understand why he's not here. If that is the case, you know, we don't know for sure, but it seems like that. I'm on Gibbs' side here. And I also don't think he would do this if there wasn't, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, because he does have multiple years left on his contract. Once, you know, pick up the option, all that stuff, like, he's still under contract. So why would you sit out unless you think that this is close to getting done? That's kind of how I'm viewing it. So if that's the case and this gets wrapped up in a week or so, you know, more power to him. And I think it's a good decision.
Yeah. Can't go back and keep talking about 2022 and then say light at the end of the tunnel, because, you know, then we're back to Metallica and freight trains and this whole thing is just all very confusing.
Fair enough.
Cool. Jeff, what are people in your sphere saying about it? I feel like you interact with the fans even more than we do. What's the temperature out there on Gibbs's hold in, assuming that is what it is?
I think overwhelmingly it's pay the man. I think overwhelmingly it's pro Gibbs. And I mean, rightfully so, despite what I've said about running backs. And I fully take all the responsibility that comes with that take that I do spew every single day. But what Gibbs' situation, like, I'm with Colton, and just in terms of, like, you know, from Gibbs' side of it, I completely understand. I mean, if your contract's about to get done, it's smart business to not play. You know, at least not be there right now, because risk of injury is incredibly high. So I think fans have been nothing but supportive. Of course, there's going to be some fans that are like pro team that are like, you know, just play, yada, yada, yada. But I think a majority of fans understand it. I think they're pro Gibbs, which they should be at this point.
And if you're going to pay a running back, the dude that's 24, that is a big play, speed merchant, like, again, durable, like, this is the guy to pay, right? I think it's a relatively easy decision. And I think the good thing here is the Lions have set a bar. They have a lengthy and established track record of, as long as you're not aged out, right? Like, young guys that they've drafted, they pay, and they have no problem paying and resetting the market. They've done it with Jack Campbell and St. Brown and Sewell and McNeil and Kirby Joseph. Like, you can feel confident this is going to get done.
Bro, now the Lions have a slot merchant via George Pickens, and they have a speed merchant via Justin Rogers. Just an offense full
of merchants.
They
got two of them.
I know you meant that as a compliment, but that was like derogatory, low-key.
Is it really?
Yeah, dude.
Oh,
clip
well.
It, clip it, and we're going to go.
I know how you meant it. I know how you meant it. We all know.
No, I'll echo some sentiments. And look, dude, Jahmyr Gibbs has been training with an MMA fighter all offseason. I think he's okay if he misses a week or two of practice. This guy is steeled and ready for the season. And, like, this is why they have set aside this money. There's no doubt this deal is going to get done. Holmes has never intimated, suggested that they intend to sign a core player and fail to follow through. So just know that they've steadily made their way through their draft classes. 2023 is up next. Campbell kicked things off. It wouldn't be a surprise to see Gibbs sign a deal that is almost identical to Campbell's in average annual value, somewhere around that $20 to $22 million per year mark. And I also think, I guess, just to kind of build off what I was saying in the first segment, investing in the offensive line is investing in Gibbs. And this is why it made sense to draft Jahmyr Gibbs in the first place. Not every team in that draft was a good landing spot for Gibbs, had the infrastructure in place to maximize his potential. I would argue what the Giants did with Saquon Barkley, drafting him second overall when they did, was asinine. It was ludicrous, because they were not a team that was a running back away from vaulting themselves into NFL contention, and they had major offensive line issues. Contrast that with the Lions in 2023. As we've covered, and as we all know, they had already the makings of a top three, top two offensive line, plug an explosive playmaker, a speed merchant like that into that formula, and you're going to get what you've gotten through 3 years. And now they're doing the same thing. They signed Cade Mays for the next 3 years. They draft their right tackle of the future. They're moving Pineda to left. They do believe they have their guards, their pillars in place for, you know, the next several years in Ratledge and hopefully Mahogany. And so you can continue to maximize this asset in ways that other teams can't or couldn't. And I think if you sign him to a four-year deal, it makes a lot of sense to take him through his age 29 season. And, like, for example, Christian McCaffrey is an interesting comparison. Obviously, he had a lot of injuries earlier in his career, so he's had less miles on his body at this point. But last year, in his age 29 season, which would be the last season of Gibbs' deal where he'd assign a four-year deal. McCaffrey almost went 1K, 1K rushing, receiving. He was first-team All-Pro. He led the NFL in touches. He won NFL Comeback Player of the Year. So, you know, he is deployed in a very similar way as Gibbs, and they have similar play styles, similar body types in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility or reason to think that, you know, Gibbs's game could age in a similar way. Even look at the numbers that Alvin Kamara put up in his age 29 season, I think 2 years ago, still highly productive. And that's a player who's already, you know, begun to trend down in a lot of ways, but still I think you can reasonably bank on Gibbs with continued offensive line investment and continued RB2 investment to be a very impactful player still by the end of, say, a four-year contract.
Bertie, I was thinking about this earlier. Of all the players on this offense right now who can afford to miss time in practice, Gibbs has to be up there, right? Like, he's a guy that, you know what you're getting from him. He's a big play threat. You create a hole for him, he's taking it. Like, that's his job is very easy in this offense.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, like, even Goff and Saint and the receivers, they need time to learn Drew Petzing's offense and the timing and the routes that he wants to install. The offensive line obviously needs to gel. You know, Isaac Tislaw, Sam Laporta. Sam Laporta missed time. Isaac Tislaw, still a young guy. Those guys need to, you know, be here for practice. I'm trying to think if there's another player that can, you know, miss a week and still be good more than Gibbs. I think Gibbs is the answer. Just thinking.
Yeah. About that. No, I totally agree. Maybe Saint, just because he and Jared have such an established connection. But yeah, no, I'm with you. And like, there's a reason his teammates call him an alien. There's a reason they call him a cheat code. Like, cheat codes work even if you don't use them for a little bit. You still use it, and you still get an 85-yard touchdown at the drop of a hat. So yeah, as long as it's not going to drag deep into camp, and I highly doubt that it will, I don't see much of an issue here for the Lions or for Gibbs.
Well, let's get to our proud sponsor, Prize Picks of Lions Collective. New users can play $5 and get $150 in bonus lineups if you win today. We are talking about Gibbs, and I have to show you guys. All right, here we go. John Collins, I got you. All right, if you guys have been following that, the John Collins thing ended up working out. Now we're going on Prize Picks, and these are my picks, by the way, for the season. So we have Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm still full faith he's going to ball out. I'm going more on the for his rushing yards. You got 1,199.5. I think he gets 1,200. Jared Goff more on his passing yards. He's just got to get 4,050. Okay, this guy's hitting 4,000 every single year. And then Jake Bates. Okay, this one, you can say I'm a sicko and I got to call the number. Jake Bates, 27.5. This one, guys, I am down bad. I've gotten to a point where I am down bad. If you're betting on Jake Bates to basically go over on field goals made, I am down bad. But it's okay to be down bad with Prize Picks because they are our sponsor. And again, you play $5, get $150 if you win. Code HMA. We still have more to get to.
Hold on. I love that it's set at 27.5 because you know how many he made last year?
How many?
27. Call the number, dog.
Hey, isn't that bad for the offense if they're kicking more field goals?
That's a situational football criticism right there.
Well, maybe they're kicking the same, but he's just making more. You know, there's the possibility that Bates has a career year. 28. Yeah,
I just
he's going
at
28 of 28.
You know, 2024, when they had that great offense, he made 26. So, you know,
there we go.
Okay. He had 27 last year.
Yeah, he was just more efficient.
Close. I mean, I'm close here. I'm right on that line here, fellas.
Jeff, if you start betting over-under extra points for Jake Bates, we're going to sit you down.
Yeah, and that's fair. You know, that's the type of relationship this show has. I understand that. Let's get into some Sam Laporta because Sam is back. He talked about it. He spoke to the media. He spoke to you guys and talked about the injury, back injury, and he said he feels really good, and I think it's important to have him out there. You mentioned the offensive line, and his blocking is something that they've obviously missed on top of how much he can make plays in the receiving game. Last year, they didn't get anything from the tight end room, but Sam Laporta is back. We talked about it last week, but now he's actually there, and he just feels you listen to him speak. He's just in a good mindset. What did you guys kind of take away from Sam Laporta today? Pretty positive, despite having the contract kind of looming in the background there.
Yeah, Sam was pretty chipper today, I'm not going to lie.
He's
in a good mood, happy to be back out there and running around. But I thought he had a pretty insightful scrum. I think he spoke for like maybe 8 to 10 minutes, but had some good stuff in there. Revealed kind of just the process of injury. You know, obviously the herniated disc, had surgery for it, He said he started working with Brett Fisher with the Lions on January 4th. So that was about 5 weeks post-surgery.
The day the Lions play their last game.
Yeah, I guess that is the Bears game.
Yeah.
So that's the early timeline, early January. I think the biggest thing for him as he's kind of, the initial injury hits, obviously, back injuries, you never know with those. He said he kept talking to his wife and was just like, man, like, I hope I get the nerve strength back in my back. Like, this is really bad. And she's just like, dude, the doctor said you're going to be fine. Like, relax. Yeah. So she's the one, like, calming him down. And, LaPorta does seem like a bit of an overthinker sometimes. Yeah. So it's
sounds good like to have that balance at home. You're throwing a little pity party on the couch. She was like, yeah. Man up, dude.
Yeah. She's like, get up.
Yeah.
You're going too much. So it's always nice to have someone to, talk you off the ledge, so to speak. So. Yes. He got back at it, and something he said is the nerve strength came back about 2 to 3 months ago. And he said he's been kind of running around and bending well, and he's feeling good. So he's been doing all that for about 3 to 4 months now. So he feels like he's in good spirits. A few months post injury, obviously, maybe I think when the season first ended, a lot of us were a little bit unsure of the timeline. Would they take it easy with him in training camp? But obviously, it was reported before that he's full go. In OTAs, we would see him in the morning for walkthroughs, then he kind of disappeared. He was out there the full time today, so obviously looking like his old self, getting to know the offense, working with Drew Petzing now in a more, live setting when he wasn't able to do that this spring. So he seems to be in a good spot right now, and the Lions are going to need him to be. He's had some training camps where, nagging injuries have kind of popped up for him, and you've seen it kind of linger into the season. So the fact that he's full go now and he's feeling good, I think that can kind of springboard him into having a really, really good season and get back to where he was as a rookie. And even last year, the pace that he was on before he got hurt, he's playing some damn good football here.
Yeah.
And to have a coach now like Drew Petzing, and we've seen the way he's utilized tight ends in Arizona. I'm not sure if it's going to be the same effect as a Trey McBride, but he's going to be a very consistent option in this offense. And I'm sure Petzing's going to do everything he can to scheme him up, get him good looks, and have him be a weapon out there.
Can I just say quickly before you jump in here, J-Raj, I don't mean at all to minimize the severity of Sam's injury. And from the way he described it today, it sounded like it was pretty dire for a little bit. Like I actually was shocked to learn how uncertain, at least in his mind, the outlook was post-surgery for a while. I mean, he revealed that, as he was waiting for the nerve strength to come back in his lower half, he was told, look, there's no guarantee that it's going to come back. It might not come back. And at some point he began wondering, is he going to be able to play again? Basically, is my career now in jeopardy after just 3 short seasons? And maybe that's the norm for any herniated disc injury that requires surgery, but it definitely resonated with me, like just how severe and uncertain this outlook was for Sam after surgery. So to eventually get that full strength back, obviously was very freeing, very liberating for him. And then the other thing that stuck out to me about Sam today was he was talking about how the Lions can reestablish themselves as the contenders they were in 23 and 24. And he said it starts with situational football. And he mentioned 4 areas. He said, we got to play better on third down. We got to convert more on fourth. We got to be better in the red zone. And we got to be better in short yardage. And those are relevant coming from Sam because those are 4 areas of the offense in which he is deeply involved. He has a real impact on the field in all areas of those games. And he's right. He's absolutely right. In 2024, I didn't get a chance yet to look up short yardage. Maybe one of you guys can. But in 2024, the Lions were 4th in the NFL on third down. They were 7th on fourth, and they were 3rd in the red zone. And that was obviously with a healthy Sam LaPorta and a fully healthy offense. Last year, they fell to 20th on third down, 15th on fourth, and 8th in the red zone. So a regression in all of those categories. And I would bet those regressions were even sharper when LaPorta was out for the final, was it 10 or not, 8-9 games. So getting him back alone, I think, should help solve those issues right away.
I don't need to say anything again about the numbers with and without LaPorta. I mean, I think illustrated it pretty clearly last week. They were last in the NFL in tight end production in the weeks that he was out, and by it was a significant margin. So getting him back is obviously huge. I appreciated, I guess, the personal touch to Sam's session today, just listening back to it and, expressing that fear you know, kind of making light of it a little bit in hindsight and joking around with the comments you mentioned with his partner, I think just adds an important layer of humanity that sometimes gets lost, both media and fan base, with these players. And I don't think I realized how extensive, I guess, the nerve stuff was.
Yeah.
I think we knew herniated disc, and I've never had any of that, but really good friend and my wife have both dealt with, you know, herniated disc kind of dipping into the spinal columns and what that does to nerves. And, you know, the way it's kind of been explained to me, like, when the nerves are agitated in that way and causing pain, like the reaction of them is to turn off, you know, and just to, and you lose feeling in whatever body part that extends to, often, you know, legs, sometimes arms, whatever it is. And some nerves don't turn back on, like they die. And so it's really understandable that, you know, as Sam's probably Googling, as we all do when we have medical conditions, and reading the horror stories, like I understand why he panicked, you know.
Yeah.
The friend I mentioned, like, he has no feeling in his foot. He has drop foot, and he's had it since college. And that's crazy. Like, to never regain your ability or your strength in your ankle to ever have that again, that ends your career as a football player. And so I don't think people fully appreciate how good Brett Fisher is, the Lions director of sports performance. I know they get a lot of criticism for some of their injury issues, which I still would contend is largely bad luck. But the way people in that building talk, especially people that were there pre-Brett Fisher and post-Brett Fisher, the way they talk about him, the way he builds out plans long-term and short-term for rehab and maintenance was really, really critical for a guy like Frank Ragnow to get past kind of his darkest days of his career and get the best out of himself again towards the end of that career. Like, is extremely valuable to the Lions getting these players back. And, you know, I think it's really good. I think Sam looked a little rusty today, but that's to be expected, right? Like, you've had a long layoff and you got to get back into the flow of things. And I have no doubt by the time week one rolls around, he'll be close to, if not at, peak performance.
Yeah. Well said, Justin. And if you want a good laugh, go watch Laporta's press conference and go to the very end when he's talking about how Jackson Meeks might learn that you sometimes get beat as a tight end. And Sam was talking about how he learned that lesson at Iowa, trying to block AJ Epenesa. And then what happened was Tristan Wirfs trampling over him after almost every snap. But yeah, it was fun to see a lighthearted human side of Sam again, kind of the Sam that we got to know as a rookie.
Did you not think, oh, that's where your back issue started, when you got stepped on repeatedly by Tristan Wirfs?
Yes.
No kidding.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Well, I do, to kind of close out the show here, Will, you got to break down the R&R.
Yeah.
We talked about it in the group chat, but I'll give you the floor here.
Yeah, so we, as we do every year, this morning recorded our Fox 2 Lions training camp special, which will air on Fox 2 tonight at 7 o'clock in 21 minutes, in fact. So make sure you sit down and watch that. As a little tease, I want to take you guys inside something that Dan told us that I think he intends – to tell the team, but he hadn't yet as of this morning. And it sounds to me like a little bit of a team motto for 2026. I know Dan isn't necessarily huge on those, but I think last year's was hunting season, and the year before that was we want more. Well, we were talking to him this morning, and I think it was Woj. Of course it was Woj. We asked him if he's feeling the heat from the outside or any pressure after last year's 9-8 last place season. Honestly, a perfectly reasonable question. And Dan said, among other things, that my, you know, the pressure or heat from me comes from letting players down. You know, that's where it always stems from. It's nothing about job security or outside noise. But he eventually went on to say, I haven't told the team this yet, but man, I want some R&R. And you're like, what are you talking about? And he says, man, redemption and respect. So that's what this league's about. You want to make your mark. That's the type of team that you got to be, and you got to do things a certain way. So, you know, he says, I feel pressure not externally, but internally, like from myself, to get us back to where we need to go. And I mentioned Colton, the mentality comment, and wanting to sort of reprise the Lions identity from 22, 23. I also asked him about that and how he wants that to show up. How does he want that to manifest itself in training camp, obviously, and then over the course of the season. Because make no mistake, dude, these guys are going to go at each other in camp. No joint practices. They want to control the tempo and the heat of these next 5 weeks. And I think Campbell's going to crank it up pretty good. And he said that, like, the undergirding all of that talk about getting back to who they are is, we are not going to beat ourselves. Like, that is the focal point. And he's like, you got to be very disciplined to practice like that if you want to play like that. And he also said, I want teams to know, if you're going to beat us, you better have the horses, A, and B, you're going to need about 20 things to go your way. That's the mentality, he said, Cole. And he said, of course, we want to win the division. We want to make our mark in the playoffs. Of course, we want a Super Bowl. But if we go back to what it was, what I started with, he said it was, you're going to know that you played us and you don't want to play us again. And if you do beat us, it's because you feel like you got lucky. If we do that and get back to that, he said, everything else will handle itself. So it's sort of a combination of that violent, nasty, relentless play style that those guys were able to summon based on their backgrounds in 22 and 23. And this idea of playing more cleanly, more crisply, that also evaded them last year. And, you know, I think it was reflected sometimes in offensive line penalties. That's part of playing a more disciplined brand of football. So as much as he wants this team to get back to its meanness, he also wants it to get back to its cleanness. And I think if they can do those things, that's when teams will feel like, yeah, we need everything to go our way this week to beat this team.
It sounds like it's rubbing off on the players. I mean, just listening to Laporta talk today and mentioning, like, the situational football and the things we need to do kind of between the margins to get better and, you know, not beat ourselves like they did at times last year. Sounds like that message is already being received by the players. And one thing that stood out when you said that, you said, you know, having the horses and needing like 20 things to go your way, that got them pretty far a couple years ago when they went to the NFC Championship game. The 49ers not only had the horses, but they literally needed 20 things to go their way to prevent the Lions from getting to the Super Bowl that year. So if that's sort of the type of season we're talking about based on this new mentality and maybe the, you know, renewed, you know, winning between the margins, like that sort of mentality.
Yeah.
You combine that, you can have, you know, pretty good year and, you know, set yourself up for playoff success in ways that obviously wasn't there last year and the year before. So if it works out that way, man, you could have something pretty special on your hands.
Did we come up with the name for Kyle's next beer at Dog and Pony?
The R&R. Respect and Redemption. I like it. Well, he could do it too. One could be Respect and one could be Redemption, but you can only have one if you order the other. It has to be a package deal.
No, that ooh,
like
me.
A black and tan.
Yes. Yeah.
It could be a layered beer. Yeah.
No.
Kyle, you listen to this?
Oh, he is.
Kyle Ruin, knows. Baby. The Respect and Redemption for me when I go to Dog and Pony Show Brewing, the night I'm drinking is the Respect. And then I wake up, and the next day is Redemption. I'm going back.
Yeah,
they thought they got me. So Kyle knows all about that. Shout out to him, man. I got to get back out there, actually. I'm going to golf with him soon. So shout out to Kyle, man.
Oh,
shout
nice.
Kyle. Dog and Pony Show Brewing.
I got to get me some Colonel Lagers. I'm a little bit short right now. I got to go in there.
Yeah, me too.
Load
I'm
up.
Low too.
Yeah. They go quick, you know? It's just easy. They're good drinking beer.
Yeah, well, you have some friends over. Everyone's getting Colonel Lagers, good times, right. You know. And yeah, I gotta hit up Kyle again. We gotta get back out there. Gotta make it happen.
I really quickly want to just make a point about redemption because I do think it starts with Dan Campbell. I look back at the John Morton hire, and I know I'm going back and replaying something that's old and been talked about, but like that's arguably and maybe not even arguably Dan's biggest mistake. In this job was that hire. And I think he got a little locked in on that hire. I think very similar to the way that Bob Quinn got very locked into the Matt Patricia hire, right? Like it just, he had eyes for one guy and couldn't see maybe some of the pitfalls that possibly would come with that. And look, he corrected obviously very quickly and pulled the reins back from the play calling reins back from Morton, but it was almost too late. Right. And so you lost that season because of it. And I'm a big fan of the Petzing hire. We'll see how that plays out, but I feel like that was kind of the start of the redemptive arc of this team was fixing that and then extending to Brad. He got put in a little bit of a tougher spot with the Ragnow retirement, but fixing that offensive line, you know, you've got an offense that, I mean, statistically didn't take the hugest step back, but like talking about that situational football again, right? Like the third downs, the key plays at the key times, like it just wasn't there. The efficiency of the ground game just wasn't there. And so when I look at redemption of this team, to me, it starts with the redemption of this offense. I think the unit's going to be really good this year. I have a lot of faith in the moves they made. And so you pile that into everything we've talked about, the mentality, and I think that's kind of the heart of where them getting back to where they were comes from for me.
Yeah, I'll leave you guys with this Campbell quote also from our Fox 2 show. Go watch it. It starts at 7. Go watch it. It starts at 7. It's on Fox 2. You can stream it too. As understated as Dan has been this offseason for good reason, he is determined. You can really feel it when he speaks to sort of reestablish the Lions into this juggernaut. And he said today about 9-8, it eats at you and it comes in waves. He said there is an embarrassment to it, and I'm responsible for that. And I'm going to be one of the ones responsible for getting it back to where it needs to be. So, look, obviously a long, long way to go. Everyone's hopeful and optimistic on the first day of camp, but I was definitely struck today at the podium and then during our show at Dan's, like, adamant intentions to restore the Lions to what they were and who they were over the first 3 years of their contention phase.
Those some bars right there. All right,
right, dude. He was going at it. I was like, just take a mic.
No doubt, bro. No doubt.
I love it. Again, big, big shout out, Kyle, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Shout out to Prize Picks. Again, all you people that tune in every single week and support the channel. We will be back next week. I know we kind of stay fluid. You know, we got training camp. So if there's ever a change, you guys will be the first to know. But until next week, we will catch you all.
Peace.